Blog Talk Radio.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
A new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the block held by Mark Gatineau.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio home. I don't know how he did it.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Emmitt Smith has eclipsed Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time rushing leader, and somewhere, sweetness is smiling.
One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Touchdown Giants with 35 seconds to go, Manny McFerrin.
And the Giants, with the most improbable win, have won Super Bowl 42.
Control yourself. Just tell them to stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time and patience.
Good skill stuff. You're never too old for skill.
Well, Woody Johnson cleaned the house, and now he has begun to fill the house. He couldn't wait any longer, and the new regime for the New York Jets has been chosen. Who are Mike Maccagnan and Todd Bowles? Are they sound choices to lead the Jets moving forward? We have a ton of football to talk today. The evolving New York Jets, a little bit of New York Giants, and some championship game coverage. We'll mix in some other stuff as well. You already know what it is. It's New York Sports 30, presented by H4 Entertainment. And I once again have no, that's where the theme song goes in, have no theme song. But what do you do when life hands you lemons? You go another week without a theme song. Like I said, we got plenty to talk about today. What I'm really excited about is that we're going to be joined in a second by Aaron Jacobs, a colleague of mine who writes for the Sports Journal. He also writes for Turn on the Knicks. Big Knicks guy, big Jets guy, knows what he's talking about. And we'll get to that disaster. That's the Knicks also. I'm actually going to bring Aaron in right now. Aaron, how you doing today, brother?
Good, good. How about yourself? Thank you for having me on the show.
I appreciate you being on, man. Listen, the Knicks are 5-36. They lost in London today. It's glad to see that that they're just as bad in England as they are in the United States.
They're just as terrible anyway you bring them nowadays.
How much did you think the NBA regretted selecting the Knicks and what's happened in the time since?
Oh, they should take them off of any prime time game they have left should be immediately taken down.
The Knicks have been taken off as many national TV games for the second half of the year as they've won in the first half of the year. So I think that tells you everything you need to know. Analysis complete. We'll get to the Knicks a little bit more later, but we got to start with the Jets. And I know that Aaron's just as excited as I am because yesterday he published an article about why Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan were good choices for the Jets, and I have to agree. I think much of the fan base has to agree, and we're going to get to that a little bit more specifically in a second. But the first thing I think about, and Aaron, I'm going to want your input on this, is, the Jets GM search.
Right.
At least in my mind, really came down to how much do you trust Charlie Casserly, who was hired along with Ron Wolf by Woody Johnson. He's not a football guy, so he hired some football guys. And those are the words that are from my notes today, and then I read Aaron's article, and that's exactly what he wrote. So when you think of Mike Maccagnan, you think football guy, talent evaluator, and something that the Jets didn't have in John Idzik.
Completely, completely correct. There's a reason why the GM search had to come down to somebody who knew a little bit more about football. Moving on from, obviously – John Idzik, who knew little about football, more about numbers, and, he's been called a pencil pusher. There's a good reason for that. The guy knows about the cap, but he knows nothing about football players whatsoever. And that's the reason that the Jets roster was a disaster that it was last year. So moving on from a guy who's been scouting college players now with the Texans, he's been a part of some influential draft picks. A lot of people don't credit him for – he's obviously not the guy that drafted J.J. Watt, but he had a part to do with that. He drafted J.J. Watt, a couple of other meaningful players. So there's got to be something there that I think this guy could bring to the table, help the Jets in future drafts.
Well, there's no question. And the reason I brought up Charlie Casserly is because he was McCagnan was hired twice by Casserly, once in Washington and then in Houston, where Casserly was GM. He ended up leaving, but then McCagnan becomes director of pro scouting. And just as Aaron said, it's all of a sudden you have a guy who can actually evaluate some football talent. Has been his job description is evaluating football talent. You know, what I read about the Houston drafts is that, you know, they were so-so, and just as you had said, Aaron, we don't know exactly how much input McCagnan had with these picks. But you know what? That just taking a risk on a GM that's never been a general manager before, but has some football evaluation skills, is well worth not having John Idzik in that position anymore. It just has to be.
Correct. John Idzik just, you know, couldn't get the job done. As much as people want to blame Rex for what happened last year, and I feel for the guy, I do. You know, good for him. He got a job in Buffalo. It sucks that the Jets have to play him twice a year because you know that defense was already good, and he's only going to make it better. So, you know, good for him for getting a job. But at the same time, the fact that he wasn't given any corners and was thrown out there with a quarterback competition that he kind of seemed like really he didn't want, and Geno Smith and Michael Vick, and you can't blame it all on him. Most of the blame, I think, should go to Idzik and not filling out the roster. Now, obviously, for McCagnan, he's going to have a great amount of cap room to deal with, and I think that that's going to be influential in reshaping this roster the way that the new head coach, Todd Bowles, would want.
Oh, there's no question. He certainly has a task ahead of him. If I had to describe what McCagnan has ahead of him, it's certainly a task and a challenge, but he's known as a grinder. He's known as somebody who isn't concerned with the limelight and is not concerned with much except results, and that kind of shift is exactly what the Jets needed. But wait, that's only the half of it, because there's the head coach inside of this. There's Todd Bowles, who McCagnan did not have a previous relationship with but did end up approving of. Former defensive coordinator in Arizona, you know, he's been a position coach in Dallas and Cleveland, and he actually is returning home a little bit. He's from New Jersey, and his first professional coaching job was with the Jets secondary in 2000 under Bill Parcells, and that's the coaching tree that he comes from. Naturally, Aaron, we're going to play this comparison game between the old coach and the new coach.
Of course.
We know that Bowles has a, he's a take charge of the defensive side of the ball. He's a head coach that's going to call the defense just as Rex Ryan did. He's known for creativeness and aggressiveness schematically, which is something that you mentioned in your article. The Jets not having to shift away from their base 3-4 is actually something that, you know, is going to go under the radar. But once we start talking about schematics in the summertime during training camp, it's going to come up huge. So they're professionally, you know, as football coaches, you know, very similar guys, but, you know, that's right there is where the similarities stop. You know, as far as characters go, we couldn't be getting more opposite of a Rex Ryan.
Correct. I feel like when you talk about Bowles, you're getting the Rex Ryan, the attacking style of defense without the Super Bowl guarantees and the playoff guarantees and all the other fuel on the fire that Rex's mouth cost him in New York, which is why I think eventually, you know, management just grew hold of it. Even the fans grew hold of it. Eventually, there's only so much you can do guarantee-wise and talk-wise before you have to put the product on the field. And Rex just couldn't do that. Now, obviously, again, wasn't given the proper tools. Of course, I'll give him that. But then there comes a point where it has to be scaled back. And obviously, from watching that presser in Buffalo, they're not holding him back, so he's going to start making guarantees there, and we'll see how long it lasts up there with them. But I think Bowles is going to bring you, again, attacking style of defense. Now you just got to get him the right players in place to play the attacking, aggressive, blitz style of defense that he likes to play.
And you know what, it really seems that even though there's only a few guys on that Jets defense that I guess are keepers, you would say, mostly in that front seven and specifically on the line itself, but you know, it really could work schematically, and as I said, we're going to get kind of that stuff of it, you know, more. But this certainly is a fit. You can't say it's not. Just as Aaron said, you know, we're not going to get any Super Bowl guarantees. We're not going to get, you know, Todd Bowles isn't going to win a press conference. Whereas, you know, it's easy. It's an easy scapegoat, but, you know, Rex being Rex, that's what he is. We saw the press conference yesterday. He's back. It's just what he is. But you know, scaling that down, just as Aaron said, is kind of exactly what the Jets needed. Maybe a little bit, at least. It's not as fun to, you know, maybe cover the team rather than giving you gold in each press conference. But the only thing we as fans care about is wins. And, you know, Woody Johnson finally turned his attention from finances to football, and these hires play right into that. They're sound football men. But
I'd rather be winning in January than I would at a press conference in mid-August.
Well, he's winning the press conference in January also, but only because he got fired from his previous job.
Right, exactly.
Rex, and, you know, it's funny, man. Go ahead.
I just think Bowles, the biggest thing with Bowles that people don't realize is the numbers that I was looking at today blitzed more than any other coach in football last year. I think that style of defense with the front that the Jets already have, if you can get him a pass rusher, whether it be draft or free agency, if you can get him a solid pass rusher and some cover corners outside, you're talking about a defense that can be, I don't want to say dangerous because obviously it's a building process and there's problems in the back end and that have to be addressed. But I think that you could still be looking at an elite-level defense.
Yeah, I agree because I don't see a reason why somebody who's renowned for their defensive prowess that doesn't have to change a system for the talent that's there or doesn't have to thrust a new system upon the personnel that is already there, maybe gives them a little bit of a built-in advantage. And, what that sounds like, blitzing the most, being the most aggressive schematically, it sounds like the first, three or four years under Rex Ryan is pretty much what it sounds like.
Correct. Again, except it's just without the Rex Ryan, the mouth that is Rex Ryan, which I think is something that the Jets have needed for the past couple of years because it's time to take a step back out of the limelight, stop making the back page of the Post for the wrong reasons and start doing it for the right reasons at some point in time.
You're right. And there's one more thing that I do want to get to about Rex, but I just want to mention that the offensive and defensive coordinator hires Chan Gailey, former unsuccessful head coach in Buffalo, but a very successful coordinator before that, and Casey Rogers coming on as offensive and defensive coordinators respectively. Rogers has been a defensive line coach in Miami for a long time. He's coached defensive line his whole career, but as we said, he's more of a preparation game plan guy, whereas once we get into the game, Bowles is making the call. I hear a lot of people complaining about Chan Bailey, Aaron, but oh, I'm sorry, Chan Bailey, Chan Gailey, but one thing that we're going to say is that we see a lot of guys, people say this about Rex, that are excellent as coordinators, not quite as head coaches. We see it with Wade Phillips when he was the head coach, and you know what, my thing is that if we're going to put our faith as fans in Bowles, and Bowles' first choice was Chan Gailey, then it seems to me like it's way too early to judge one way or the other just on the hire itself.
I think that's right. I think you gotta look at it from this perspective. Personally, I'll take Chan Gailey over Tony Sperano and Marty Morningwig any day. I've seen
combined.
I've seen a Chan Gailey offense. When he was in Buffalo, he got the most out of C.J. Spiller, Fred Jackson, and Ryan Fitzpatrick. Moving on from that, he went to Kansas City. He got the most out of Tyler Thigpen. Tyler Thigpen. Tyler Thigpen. I'm going to say it a third time. This guy's a nobody, and he got, I think it was finished with like 3,200 yards and 22 TDs under Chan Gailey. Don't tell me the man can't coach some offense, because he certainly can. And the thing that I like about it, again, we don't know Geno Smith's going to be the quarterback. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be. But Chan Gailey likes to run a little bit of a spread offense. And Geno Smith came from a spread type of offense in West Virginia. And I think that could fit him very nicely if that's the direction the Jets decide to go. Again, we don't know yet. Too early to tell. But I think it could be a big help to Geno as Gailey's considered kind of a quarterback groomer. So we'll kind of see where that goes.
Yeah, well, obviously we're not going to hold our breaths for seeing Geno Smith succeed in the NFL, but we all watched him at West Virginia tear up defenses and spread. I mean, I guess that's the knock on these quarterbacks. We're seeing it now with Marcus Mariota because it doesn't quite translate to the NFL. But, you know, we saw with RG3 his rookie year, Mike Shanahan built a system for his quarterback to succeed. And if you have an offensive coordinator that has that kind of relationship with the quarterback, if it's Geno Smith, then that kind of thing can work. I think the one thing that we're seeing with all of these hires, whether it's McCagnon finding diamonds in the rough, whether it's Bowles making the most of an injury-depleted roster, or whether it's Gailey as doing pretty much the same thing, as Aaron just pointed out. You know, we're seeing a lot of player development, talent evaluation, making the most with less kind of hires here. And when you look at a depleted Jets roster that needs to be really turned over from the inside out at almost every position, this really, really does feel like a match. And, you know, Jets fans, we're used to so many bad decisions and so many poor outcomes that and just a very dysfunctional situation that we're almost in culture shock by something that appears like it could actually go very soundly and very smoothly. We do want to move on to a couple other things, but I'm just going to say this about Rex Ryan in Buffalo, and Aaron kind of alluded to this before. You know, what's that effect is on Jet fans is that even for all his bluster and bravado and the fact that he needs to shut his damn mouth about 8 billion times in his 6 years here, you know, there's a level of respect and a level of, you know, compassion that fans have towards Rex, especially the way that he went out. And, you know, I could have rooted for Rex Ryan in Atlanta or on TV, but now that he's in Buffalo, that part where you want to personally, if not professionally, root for somebody is completely taken out of the equation. The old friend becomes the enemy, and when you look at that defense, we actually have something to fear now.
I know that this is going based off of a rumor, but this is, again, I know I alluded to Rex before, this rumor that I heard is true. If it's true, Rex, I'm begging you, please sign Mark Sanchez. Please sign Mark Sanchez. I am begging you to sign Mark Sanchez. Make it easier for the Jets. I'm begging you.
I hate to be the Mark Sanchez. I don't mean to be a Mark Sanchez apologist because he is responsible for so many of the things that went wrong with his tenure in the Jets the last 2 years, years 3 and 4. But I will say this. My best memory as a Jet fan is beating the Patriots in Foxborough, Mark Sanchez, 300 yards and 4 touchdowns. Thank you for that one, Mark Sanchez.
I hear you. All right, we'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. He was, serviceable at best, absolutely dreadful at worst. He's a marginal NFL quarterback that just so happened to, I think he did, raise his level when we got to the playoffs, but we weren't a good enough team all around, partially his fault, to get there every year, and that's what happens. So we do have these NFL conference title games, but the first thing we got to get to is the Knicks, even more than the title games, because there's just a couple things that need to be spoken about. And you know what? I shouldn't be riled up over a 5-36 team. I'm usually able to sit there and be like, ah, down by 20 in the second quarter, used to it. Oh, Shane Larkin, used to it. Oh, Clay Anthony Early and Travis Ware get the most minutes on the team. Whatever. But you know what, Aaron? There's something that's bothering me. And it's bothering me because there's nothing good that can come from it. Maybe no bad, but there's nothing good that comes from Carmelo Anthony still playing basketball this season. And the fact that he's still playing, I don't care about the All-Star game being in New York. I don't care about, you know, I'm not going to look at him as he's given up on the team. I'm looking at $100 million and 4 more years that he's under contract. And even if the knee's not going to get any worse playing, I know one thing for damn sure, it's not getting any better. Tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to get any better. That's for sure. And, at 5-25, I think it should have been shut down. Like, that should have been it. There should have been no talk about Carmelo. I don't care that the All-Star game's in New York. You just invested $124 million in this guy. It's time to shut him down, move on to next season, and let it be from there, because there's no reason Carmelo Anthony should be playing basketball. I don't care if they went to London. I don't care if the All-Star game's here. None of that matters. It's about preserving your future. And last time I checked, basketball players with bad knees don't exactly win you many championships. So,
no, they don't. And we saw he got in better shape over the summer. I was all excited. You know what? The knees hurt. Listen, I'll be the first one to admit, at the time, you know, I wanted Carmelo to get re-signed, so I'm not going to say this was a terrible decision. I still think that if everything, you know, is to work out the way Phil Jackson certainly plans, that, you know, the Knicks can get back to maybe where they were in 2012. But this guy can't be playing basketball. It's just Carmelo obviously gives the terrible Knicks a better chance to win, scratch out a win here and there. Well, that doesn't matter anymore. What does it matter if we end up with 20 wins or with 11 wins or maybe with a single-digit amount of wins, which, I don't know, I think I'd personally just like to avoid. I'd like 13 and 69.
You're saying it doesn't matter. We should be losing games because at this point it's about how many ping pong balls you could possibly get up in the top three.
Yeah, that's right. No, it is. It's so true.
There's no reason that we should be competitive anymore. We should be looking at what Cle'Anthony Early, Tim Hardaway Jr., Shane Larkin, and those guys can do in the future, and at that point just pray for as many ping pong balls as physically possible.
Well, you're 100% right, and that's why we see how bad this team is. They were obviously a lot worse without once Shumpert and Smith got hurt before they were dealt. Stoudemire and Anthony were both out. The Knicks were maybe for a 10-game stretch there. Never mind. But, you know, Derek Fisher is the thing that's why it's hard to blame Derek Fisher for the roster. We can say that he hasn't done such a great job so far. But, you know, fans can chant fire Fisher and they can complain about Derek Fisher on talk radio and write about it, you know, all they want. But Derek Fisher's not going anywhere. Phil Jackson is not pulling
what you
Fisher.
Just said
close.
Is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Who did that to me? Oh, that's our
what you just said.
Watch. And that's me putting the volume down and keep it down. I just got like photobombed, but on the thing with him laying out some Billy Madison on me. No, I'm not kidding. That you just made me even more mad. Marcus Von Legend, thank you, our producer, and he's now a jerk because I'll be the first one to say, Aaron, that Derek Fisher hasn't done a great job, and maybe he can never be an NBA coach. I'm not going to say that he can. But to let this season be the ultimate judge of him is truly unbelievable, and he deserves at least next season to, you know, see what he's got, no?
It's not fair for a guy like Derek. For Derek Fisher is, you know, outside of, let's forget basketball, a nice guy. There's no reason that Derek Fisher
great guy.
Should be judged on this season. Derek Fisher came into this team and inherited a roster that was flawed from the beginning, and that's not his fault. The only thing that Derek Fisher can take fault in this season is the fact that he couldn't settle in on a rotation earlier in the season. You can't play 13, 14 guys a night and expect there to be cohesiveness on the court. That is the one thing that I will fault Derek Fisher for personally. But outside of that, the fact that your backup options consist of, you know, Shane Larkin and Quincy Acey is not a starting player in the NBA. He's a bench player.
No.
Cole Aldrich is not a starter in the NBA. He's a backup center. That's not Derek Fisher's fault that he got put with these guys. Now, you know, again, this is another cap issue for Phil Jackson to deal with. Got rid of Shumpert. Bigger than that, got rid of J.R. Smith. And he needed to get those dollars off the books next year. And then you can start building a better roster, starting roster and a backup roster. So you could at least say, Derek Fisher, now you can get a steady 10 to 11-man unit going on the floor.
Well, that's exactly it. And I agree, because obviously Phil's going to have piles of money to spend. They're going to have to see who actually wants to come here. But he's going to dump his rings on the table. He's going to say, we have our middle-of-the-triangle guy and get the pieces to work around him, starting with a big man down low in the post and a point guard that can actually facilitate an NBA offense. But what I will say about what you were saying about the rotational players, I do kind of fault Derek Fisher for that, but the one thing I will give him, we spoke about two things entering the year, triangle offense and all these guys that the Knicks have coming off the books. Now, you have a conflict of interest trying to teach an intricate system that these guys have never played before to a bunch of guys that know, for the most part, I'm not even going to be here next year. And I think that's a motivation to find five guys other than, you know, the D-League players that you were just mentioning that are going to be cohesive enough to compete for 48 minutes a night is not the easiest thing to do. It's obviously not. So it's really just one of those things where there's nobody to blame. The person to blame most is probably James Dolan, but you can't blame the owner. So, you know, people want Fisher out, or they want to say Phil can't do the job. Hold your horses there. Hold your horses. You know, if Phil can't turn this around, nobody can. So this is really our last hope, it might be.
You know, I'll allude to this. I wrote this in one of my recent pieces. Rome wasn't built in a day. Now, I understand that in this case, Rome was literally knocked to the ground by bulldozers, and that was unexpected. But the fact of the matter is, you got to give Phil Jackson more than one season with the roster he was given to, you know, it's hard to put guys in place with a whole new offense, a whole new defense, a new head coach. Like, you can't expect these guys to just come in and work. And, you know, I think that's what Phil learned is from this experience is that, you know, eventually – he knew looking at the roster there were so many injuries and there were so many problems with the team and flaws at every position that it was time to just break it down, and that's now what he's doing. Judge him after next season. Let him get a couple of guys in the fold that he really wants to coach.
If you had to give it one sentence, you know, that'd be it. So before, you know, this has been great. I could do this with you for hours, bro. But, you know, before I let you go, these NFL conference title games, we're going to play a game called Who You Got. It's pretty simple. Green Bay at Seattle, week one to open the season. Seattle destroyed the Packers. They're obvious favorites to repeat in the NFC, return to the Super Bowl. I'm going to be rooting for Green Bay hardcore, not just because I got them in a pool. I just am. Who you got?
Well, based on the fact that Rodgers has calf injury, I'm going to go with Seattle. And I think it's going to be cold for the people think, but I'm going to take Seattle.
Yeah, it's hard not to, man. It's hard not to. I think I see Seattle winning. I'm going to say this, though. If that's a touchdown spread, Green Bay's keeping it within that.
Oh, they definitely are. Definitely. I think this is a three-point game. I think this is a close game.
Yeah, I know what I'm taking. Now, Indy at New England last year, 44-23, didn't go so well for Andrew Luck. I don't think it's going to be quite that lopsided, but stranger things have happened. I certainly would love to see the Colts win. We obviously would. It goes, seeing the Patriots in another Super Bowl would be whatever, but at the same time, it would kill all of us, put a knife in our hearts. But New England's going to win.
That's my mindset too. I have New England as at least a 10-point win for New England, easy. It's nothing against Andrew Luck. I just don't think that defense up in New England is going to get it done. That's just the bottom line. Stopping Tom Brady for 60 minutes,
right.
Easier said than done.
You're right. Aaron Jacobs, Sports Journal. Turn on the Knicks. Go read him. He's one of my colleagues, and we're going to have him on again soon. He could come co-host with me, you know, permanently if he wants to. Aaron, I appreciate it, bro. We'll talk on
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Soon. Oh, man. All right. No problem. The pleasure's all mine, and we'll talk again soon, bro.
Sounds good.
That's Aaron Jacobs, one of my colleagues at the Sports Journal, associated with H4TV. Marcus, that was a dirty trick, bro. Dirty trick. That's why I'm getting all your sounds off. I'll put on all my new sounds. No, I'm just kidding. He runs the place. But, you know, in my last 2.5 minutes here, there's a couple things I just want to get to. I'm going to tie in my numbers of the week segment here with the hockey update. First number of the week is 29. That's the number of wins the New York Islanders have tied for most in the NHL. First place in the Metropolitan Division, ahead of even the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're gritty. They're deep. They're fast. They can roll four lines. And they are, quite honestly, one of the best teams in the NHL. It doesn't seem like a fluke. It really doesn't. This is a team to watch down the stretch. My number two, the number two, as in the amount of times the Rangers have lost in their last 15 games. The Rangers are white hot. They lost the other day to the Islanders 3-0. All right, better. The Islanders are the better team in that game. Fine. But the Rangers are on a roll. They're up and fourth in the Metropolitan Division within striking distance of the playoffs. This team's going to end up in the playoffs, and they're going to end up dangerous. And you know why? Reason number one is the goalie. When your goalie's elite in the NHL playoffs, you always have a chance to go win. Lord Stanley's Cup, the most difficult trophy to win in all of sports, and I would argue that. So the NHL playoff race is going to be very exciting coming down the stretch in New York. Not so much of the Devils. But we'll stick it with the Islanders and the Rangers. They are killing it. Because what are you going to watch? Knicks? Nets? I don't think so. The Knicks will be done. The Nets, maybe them too. You're going to watch baseball? Okay, I'm excited about baseball also. But there's time for everything. And fit some hockey in there. You know, my one thing about the Giants in my final minute here is they ultimately decided to go another direction. They got rid of Perry Fuel, and they're going to Bagnolo, who from the 2007 Super Bowl team, defensive coordinator. Originally, Fuel was supposed to be Coughlin's choice, whether or not he wanted to keep him. He voted for Fuel publicly, but he was still fired a few days later. So what does that tell us? My theory, Tom Coughlin does not have even close to the same amount of power that he used to have in this organization. You know, Jerry Reese and Don Mara, they said, we want you back. We think you can do this, but you're comfortable with Steve Spagnuolo, so we'll help you out, but we're not giving you full say. You don't have full autonomy anymore, and And that's just the way it goes, because if it doesn't work out this year, Tom Coughlin's going to be out the door. We'll get to more next week. Congratulations, Ohio State, even though I wanted Oregon to win. We're going to talk more football, more hockey, more basketball, more everything next week. New York Sports 30, you already know what it is. We are out.